This is actually a project that I've been working together with Margaret Skinner from University of Vermont and Cheryl Frank from University of Vermont, and they are also were cited in the general program, but I didn't get them up here. The data that I'm presenting here today, though, is all data that it was part of our part of the project. So maybe. So for the last 4 years, we've been investigating plants for supporting natural enemies in greenhouses. Specifically, we've been working in herbs, in poinsettias, and this is a picture of an herb house that happens to have a lot of hanging baskets in it at the time. And the grower had told us that they needed to have whitefly control and aphid control. And when we got into it, we found out that they really needed thrips control. So what we were trying to do is create habitat for natural enemies, and we were going for aphid natural enemies, aphid parasites, and whitefly parasites. And we created these habitat baskets with, here's a habitat basket, one over each of 24 tables. So 24 habitat baskets, 12-inch pots with three marigolds, three alyssum, one barley plant with bird cherry oat aphid, Rhopalo siphon paidae, and fennel plant. And one lantana. We did this all together. We wanted to have plants that were providing pollen and nectar throughout the season. Quickly, within a couple months, found out that fennel wasn't going to work. It was too big, and we had to whack it out of the pots because it was taking over the pots. And it wasn't providing any pollen or nectar because it wasn't blooming. But then from there, we just would have, in the next two seasons, 2006 and 2007, we had two alyssum plants and two marigold plants because three alyssum and three marigolds was too much. Our purpose was to support native natural enemies, support introduced natural enemies, and to manipulate native natural enemies if we could. And our observations were that we indeed did increase wild beneficials. It wasn't just on the lantana and the barley, but these photographs happened to be on the lantana and the barley. So we had wild lacewings coming in, wild lady beetles establishing laying eggs, and the jumping spiders. And they seemed to be more, although they were attracted by the pollen and the nectar, these occurrences were more with the barley and the aphids. So my general conclusion has been over time is that the natural enemies need a little meat besides their pollen and nectar. They're not just vegetarians, and a little meat helps a lot. The aphid midge, Aphidelides, occurred on its own. That was also probably having to do with the barley plant with the aphids. And syrphids were visiting right as soon as the doors were open in the spring. As soon as it was a garage door on the end of the greenhouse, the syrphids would come in, and they not only found the sweet alyssum, which was here, but the lantana. This is a summation of all the visual encounter surveys over the season. What we did was a walkthrough, and since natural enemies are so rare, we would just record every sighting of a natural enemy, and then we did an in-depth survey of each of the 12-inch pots, of 10 of the 24 12-inch pots each week. And these sum, the natural enemies that we saw, the HPS is the habitat pot system. It's a sum of all the encounters in the habitat pot systems. This is the herbs underneath the habitat pots on the bench, and then the control herbs was another greenhouse with herb stock plants and no habitat pot systems. So, as you can see, on the benches, on the herbs, we saw very few wild natural enemies, and we saw only one occurrence of natural enemies in the control house as well. They were all on the habitat pots. The whitefly control for 3 years was excellent. It seemed that the Encarsia that we released liked to go to the lantana, but not just the Encarsia, the whitefly was going to the lantana as well and setting up a little microcosm. You can see there's little black specks here, that's Encarsia parasitized whitefly scales, and then the lantana plants cleaned up for the rest of the season. This is a close-up view of that bottom leaf. parasitized, parasitized, parasitized. Here's a hatched white flight scale, parasitized. These were parasitized, they didn't blacken for some reason, but very, very high rates of parasitism. They didn't have to spray for white flies at all in these greenhouse, in this one greenhouse for 3 years in a row. And we assume it was the lantana that was doing it. In the fourth year, they stopped using lantana. We weren't doing the experiment anymore, and they had to spray for white fly. So we were able to, I didn't show you because there isn't enough time, but we were able to demonstrate excellent aphid control using the barley banker plants, no pollen and nectar there, excellent white fly control using the lantana and the incarsia, and the nectar and pollen, or rather the pollen is involved with the habitat pots and the aureus, and this is where it got really dicey. So this is a aureus insidiosis on a marigold petal, the adult and the nymph. We were capable of finding them easily most years on the habitat baskets, but it got a little more complicated than that. In 2005, we eventually translated it into an aureus encountered per hour, because an aureus encounter for us was somewhat rare event. It was a lot rarer than encountering thrips. These are aureus releases, and the aureus was encountered in the habitat pots in this way over the season, 2005. In the control house, where there were the same releases, almost no aureus encounters. And then in the herbs, the only aureus encounters were affiliated with spider mites, which Raimi just talked about. So it wasn't the flowers, it wasn't the pollen or anything, it was spider mites. But other than that, very few encounters with aureus. They're hard to find on the regular crop. Now, breaking it out with the flowers, they were found on the lantana, marigold, and alyssum, all of them, and you can see how that worked out. The lantana may have been a little, it may or may not have been more on the lantana, because it might have been harder to find the aureus on the lantana than the marigolds. We left the marigolds in place, and we were poking around and looking. We weren't bopping these marigolds to see if they would fall out, because we didn't want to disturb it. So that was a very successful season. We had a lot of aureus reproducing at the end of the season. However, there were horrible numbers of thrips. Horrible, horrible. So we were completely unsuccessful in thrips control. And right about here, we had to spray for thrips. I think June 23rd, conserve for thrips. Took the habitat baskets out of the greenhouse and sprayed, and then put them back in. So this aureus decline apparently was from dispersal, because we didn't, and they might have died on the conserve treated crop plants, because we didn't treat the habitat baskets. So we had a decline, but then we had a big resurgence of the aureus. Unfortunately, in this particular first year, we weren't counting flowers in the pots, but we did get one count at the end of the season, August 11th. And you know, aureus, well, we know, I think, that aureus is highly affiliated with flowers. It is called the insidious flower beetle bug, insidious flower bug. So we went and counted aureus on 13 of the habitat baskets by knocking the plants against white paper, the marigolds and the lantana, and recording the number of aureus, the number of thrips, and the number of flowers for each sample. And this is the result of that. And as you can see, maybe somewhere between a half to one aureus per flower was what we were finding. And because we couldn't quantify the alyssum, except perhaps to say alyssum per square inch, because there's too many flowers, we excluded this from this particular analysis. So total flowers sampled, 71 lantana flowers on that day, August 11th, 72 marigold flowers, and on the marigolds, 0.9 aureus per flower on the average, and on the lantana, about 0.65. So, seemingly, aureus doesn't like to be in the same flower with other aureus. There's a lot more data here. The It was very important to us to know if there were, where the nymphs were and if there were nymphs, because nymphs were evidence that there was a reproducing population of aureus in the system. And that's for another talk. So the next 2 years didn't work out so well. As one scientist told me, we were just lucky. And we were, because the next 2 years, instead of having the objective of controlling aphids and whiteflies, our objective was to control the thrips using this system. And we tried. But this is 2006, and here's an aureus introduction, aureus, aureus, aureus. They're done in both control house and in the treated house. I'll just tell you, in the treated houses, we almost never found aureus after the release. So they were just like zeros right across the bottom. Here is showing you the number of flowers, marigold flowers per 10 pots. And we would have probably been successful, except we had to treat with pesticides because we had something like 500 thrips per yellow sticky card at that point, and it was time to do some treatments. And we panicked, and we treated the habitat pots with the pesticides. And the grower was trying to be real conservative and sprayed Bovaria and azotin mixed here, here, and here, August 13th, 15th, and 19th. And that knocked the aureus right down and just kept the thrips from increasing. It didn't decrease the thrips at all. So we released aureus again after that, but it seemed like we lost the game. We didn't get any aureus upsurgence or establishment that year that was anything decent. 2007, we had marigold failure. So this type of system totally relies on having good plants. And we had tried to get the marigolds flowering early. We forced them to flower in March, and their root systems were weak, and they just couldn't bloom. So we had almost no flowers. If it's like 1 to 2 flowers per pot all season. The previous season it was about 10 flowers per pot, and the aureus establishment was horrible. So we kind of went to the fallback position in this last year. Our marigold plants have become trap plants for thrips, and the grower has been simply throwing the marigold plants away when they had too many thrips, and forget the aureus. But this, we were copying a system done in Canada where this is a variety of mum called Saskia that will draw thrips even in its vegetative state, and the growers are putting that in the regular mums and then throwing these plants away with the thrips on them, so they're pulling thrips out of their crop. And here's the vegetative stage, pulling thrips out of a bare greenhouse before the new crop goes in. And this is an example of a grower putting a black plastic bag, pulling a black plastic bag up around the plant and literally throwing it away. So that's where we've come to with the marigolds this particular season, or this year, 2008. And we've gone to calling plants that we're working with in a greenhouse situation, if they happen to pull the pests, guardian plants. And our hope is that they'll pull enough pests to provide the meat that the natural enemy needs to supplement the pollen that the plants are giving. And we're wondering if we can use these marigolds as indicators and trap plants, if we can make that actually grow aureus for us as well. So our data shows us that, indeed, the marigolds do pull thrips, and they show them before the sticky cards do, but about the time thrips gets really abundant, perhaps, the sticky cards start catching a very mobile thrips population. This is 2007 data. The marigolds are pulling about the same number, or not the same number, they're totally different numbers. The yellow sticky card numbers, the scout is counting very hard here. They're up in the 400 and the 500 region, and we're just counting, 2 to 12 thrips per marigold. It probably is a much easier way to count thrips to just go to the flowers. And here's the pesticide treatments in 2007. to try to keep the thrips population from advancing. And this is 2007. It's breaking out between the marigolds, the rosemary, and the passion vine. Notice the rosemary and passion vine over here on a much, much, much smaller scale. And the thrips in the marigolds is in a much larger scale. So it seems that the marigolds certainly are pulling thrips. These are the people that have been working with us on these projects over the years. We've also been working with eggplants in a similar way, and perhaps eggplants also offer nectar and pollen in a way that we haven't been looking at. And there's a movement in the U.S. and Canada to work with a plant called black pearl ornamental pepper, which I'm not sure if it pulls thrips, but it certainly provides pollen for aureus and produces abundant aureus in the greenhouses. And so I just wanted to introduce this idea of guardian plants to you all, and thank you for your interest.
We have time for questions.
Yes. The question is, why did we choose marigolds? We had a customer that had used marigolds for 5 years to support aureus in a potato research greenhouse. And we had no other customers that could reliably support aureus from April all the way through September. They could do a single release of aureus and have aureus still at the end of the season, and also no thrips problems. What we didn't know, and we haven't answered, is whether he had been unsuccessful maintaining aureus on potatoes before that, but we never really knew if the potatoes might have maintained. It was actually, in all our cases, it was probably an interaction between the potatoes and the marigolds. In our habitat pot systems, we would have been unsuccessful establishing or maintaining aureus every single year if there had not been three separate flowers in there, because some of the things would go out of flowering when others were coming up in flowering. So a diversity in flowers probably makes a really big difference.
Thank